Coming up on this edition of the Golf Digest podcast, we get a report from Bethpage Black and have a talk with Bubba Watson.
My God, my swing feels like an unfolding lawn chair.
Well, why do they even have one if you're not supposed to hit it there?
Because it's fun! We're having fun!
What is this, custom? Mine's off the rack.
I wish Tiger Woods was here to help me with this.
We'll do it live!
Welcome back to the Golf Digest podcast. I'm Alex Myers. Today I'm joined by Sam Wyman in studio. We got Ryan Harrington calling in from Bethpage Black, site of this week's PGA Championship. Guys, it's a big week. But first, Sam, really big week here at Golf Digest. This is our first podcast now that we are under new ownership.
Yeah, this is, I mean, you'd think the PGA would be the biggest story of the week, and maybe it will be. But for us, if you follow the news, sale of Golf Digest is complete. We are now under the Discovery Golf umbrella. And I mean, I don't want to sound like too much like a company shill, but actually it's very exciting. I mean, we haven't really talked about it much, certainly, because it's not that interesting to regular fans, but we've been up for sale for 9 months. We've kind of been looking for a new home for Golf Digest, this iconic brand that we all, I think I speak for everyone here when I say we all are just thrilled to work for. But the feeling was that there was probably an opportunity to go to a new owner where there was a little bit more enthusiasm, a little bit more investment to be making in golf in particular. And certainly you look around at the landscape right now and you look at what Discovery had done a year ago in inking the PGA Tour and getting rights for the next 12 years of the PGA Tour around the world and their investment with Tiger Woods and Francesco Molinari. It's just all the things that you would look for in a new owner seemed to point to Discovery, and we were fortunate that they felt the same way about us, is that they, I mean, I think mostly they wanted to align themselves with you, Alex. They felt
You
were the it was like Tiger, Francesco, and then Alex Myers. It was kind of like in that order, though, the three biggest things. But no, I mean, I think it works out really well. We're very excited. I'm reluctant to be too enthusiastic because then I sound like a total sucker to the new bosses. But just so you know, I think everyone on the Discovery is very handsome people, just so you know. But we're thrilled, and I'm sure you'll hear more about it. We'll be doing more with them, and obviously certainly the folks at Golf TV over the ensuing months. But right now, we're obviously very excited for the PGA Championship at Bethpage Black.
Yeah, and we're kind of working with Tiger. So is he going to be on the new staff phone list update?
That's right, like a company Christmas cards. Right, exactly. Right.
He's going to play on the softball team for us this summer, right?
That sounds good. I bet he's got a little pop.
He's probably
a gap hitter.
He's going to be one of those guys like always has to play shortstop. He'll be like, listen, Tiger, listen, you know, some guys we got to put in the outfield. Just deal with it, okay?
No, but seriously, I was out at Travelers Championship Media Day yesterday. That's where I caught up with Bubba Watson, who will play that talk a little bit later. And, you know, I was kind of in different areas, and everywhere I went in the room, you could hear people, hey, did you hear Golf Digest with Bubba? I mean, it was a big deal yesterday,
right?
No doubt about it.
I mean, the only thing I'll add is that, you know, we have been for sale for 9 months, and it sounds somewhat ominous, but we've been kind of assured all along that this was always going to be a good thing for us because we felt like we were in a good position. We still kind of hold an important place in the game. Certainly, we feel like we always want to get better and work hard for golfers, but we've always been assured that, like, listen, this is going to be a good thing. We're going to end up at a place that's going to value us and value what we do, and it certainly feels like we have found that place in Discovery.
Yep. All right, let's move on. Obviously, this is a huge week. Like we said, the PGA Championship. We did a PGA preview podcast last week, but now we've got guys on the ground. Not as many maybe as we would have thought today, just because we've got a lot of stuff going on back in the office. But Ryan Harrington was one of those out there for us early. I think Sam and I will be going over there either tomorrow or the next day. Ryan, first off, my condolences on John Beilein leaving. I didn't get to see you yesterday. I was playing with one of your buddies, a fellow Michigan guy. He was pretty devastated.
It was not the greatest day for Michigan Wolverine fans in general. But, hopefully he's pushed the program on to bigger and better things and will continue on here. But, yeah, that stunk.
All right. So what today, obviously, we got a bunch of guys coming through the media center there out at Bethpage Black. Of course, let's start with Tiger Woods. He had his press conference today. The headline that we've seen the most, well, maybe the funniest headline, at least, in regards to Tiger was his little shot at John Daly. Ryan, what did you make of that?
Oh, yeah, it was very interesting. You know, his press conference was interesting. He talked, obviously, about the opportunity to come back and finally play again after winning the Masters. But in the midst of that, there was a little levity when he was asked about what he thought about John Daly driving in a cart this week. And he playfully said, well, you know, I walked on a broken leg for an entire tournament. He didn't even mention that he'd won that tournament, too. And there was the smirk and the dry smile, which said all you needed to hear, which was really he shouldn't be playing on this card. And the random dagger just out of the blue there was pretty funny. Like I said, he seemed in really good spirits, and he made a lot of people laugh at that. He didn't play any today. He practiced a little on the range, but he played 9 holes yesterday. He's going to play 9 holes tomorrow, he said. And you know, he sounded really good heading into what's now the first event post-Masters victory.
Now, on a not a light note, obviously, this lawsuit's come out today, and I just wonder, you know, I know he was asked about it today involving his restaurant. You know, not obviously it's a tragedy, but, you know, not the greatest timing maybe for him as well to be answering these types of questions during the week of a major. Do you think that that's something that could bother him, or is, you know, he kind of the one guy who can block out all these extra things?
I'm going to guess they can block it out. You know, he handled it very well. He was very deferential to the family of the individual who passed away, and you know, explained how sad he was and how sad the business he runs was for that to happen. He didn't go into any specifics, as you might imagine. But no, I think that's something that obviously, you know, it's going to be a factor in the back of his mind here. But I think he's pretty focused now on what he's going to be doing here at the golf course now that he's arrived, now that he's in the swing of things here, and just getting ready to try to play well here again. So I think he'll be able to push that aside and let others deal with it in the legal realm while he's trying to get back playing.
You know, what's interesting is that, you know, we've talked a lot about already this year, this truncated schedule and all these majors kind of packed into a pretty small window. What will be interesting to see is if Tiger has success this week, there is a strong argument to be made that people will no longer feel compelled to play between majors. I mean, or, you know, your upper echelon players. I mean, certain guys are always going to look for starts when they can. But I wonder if that's something that you could see where, you know, Tiger literally plays three events, plays the Masters, the PGA, and the U.S. Open. Did he make any indication about that, Ryo?
I don't think that's something you're going to necessarily see translate to the rest of the players out here on the tour, no. I mean, you definitely got the impression, and listening to him speak to the fact that he said he just wasn't mentally ready to play at Quail Hollow, that he would have liked to have played and whatnot, but he wasn't mentally ready, and I don't think he was physically ready, and that was why he wasn't mentally ready. And he definitely gave the impression that this is going to be the new norm, that he isn't going to be playing all that much outside of the major championships and whatnot. He never said that directly, but he definitely said, listen, I'm going to be playing when I feel like I'm ready to play in these events, and so I think that is going to be the new norm for him. As to whether that's going to impact other players and whether they'll have to take a similar stance, and I don't think that's necessarily going to happen. I don't think you're going to start seeing guys only be playing in WGC events or major championships. I think there's enough other events in there that it still are important, and you know, I think this is a unique instance, obviously, with Tiger, given his physical limitations, for lack of a better term, given all the surgeries and whatnot, that he's going to just take it easy and make sure he's ready to play when he needs to play. But I don't see this being something that you know, other people are going to adopt necessarily.
Yeah, maybe not widespread, but it's a great point, Sam, because obviously Tiger, you know, in his prime, played a limited schedule. He played about 15 events a year. And then you saw some other guys, like Adam Scott, start to do that. You've seen other guys. You know, there aren't a lot of guys who play 30 events anymore. But now with these exhibition matches potentially as well, kind of in the off season, that might supplement the schedule as well for Tiger. You know, I agree. I mean, we might see him play fewer, real PGA Tour events. We might still see him make these TV appearances and this and that, but
right,
I could see that happening.
You know,
for Tiger, I definitely think you can
see Tiger,
that.
Okay.
But I don't see Roy McIlroy or Dustin Johnson, these guys who are in the primes of their careers right now, suddenly ramping it back a little bit. I mean, I don't think their sponsors, one, would really want to see them not right. playing all that much. And number two, I think they're in the prime of their careers to really be racking up wins, racking up, you know, dollars, et cetera, et cetera. I think Tiger is a unique circumstance given where he is at this point in his career. You mentioned Adam Scott, and I think at one point you're right. Adam Scott made a decision to play a little bit less because of lifestyle reasons and whatnot. But I again, I think those are exceptions. I think these other guys are going to, you know, the new schedule has definitely changed a lot of things, and I think players are still trying to adapt to how much they can play in between major championships now that the majors are so condensed. But I don't necessarily see this being a thing where you're going to have guys who are going to take long stretches of time off just because there's another major championship on the horizon.
But you're probably right. But I would say that a lot will be dictated by how well Tiger plays mm-hmm. this week, because, you know, you mentioned Rory McIlroy or Dustin Johnson, these guys who are in the prime of their careers and want to rack up wins, but they want to rack up majors more than anything else. So right. by one measure, if there is evidence to suggest that not playing between majors, taking time off, is 10% more effective than playing, and a lot of it will be dictated by just how well Tiger plays this week, you'd say, you know what, I don't know if I need to play between, you know, the PGA yeah. and the, again, we're projecting, because I think the other way to go is Tiger has a rusty start, which right. is, you know, very yeah. possible. Shoots, you know, 73, 74. Right. Suddenly people are like, well, you know, that cost him a little bit right. because he wasn't ready to play. You know, he wasn't in the competitive peak.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think, obviously, if Tiger wins, then this is going to be the new norm for him. If he doesn't win, I think he still would give himself maybe one or two other chances to kind of prep like this. But if there is a trend where, you know, obviously he's now almost won the last three majors, if now suddenly the next three majors he doesn't contend, then maybe he says, okay, I do need to play in between. But yeah, the other guys, you're right, Ryan. I mean, they're not quite to that point yet. Although, you know, I don't know, you can make a case of Dustin Johnson and Rory McIlroy. I mean, it's not like they're playing, again, they're not playing 30 events a year. They're playing more like maybe 20 events a year. You could kind of see them maybe scaling back even a little more. But, yeah, certainly we're going to have to see how Tiger plays, because, you know, you have some people saying he could totally do this. Hogan used to do this after his accident. He basically only played the four majors. But then you have other people like Nick Faldo saying Tiger's not going to be able to do this. So, you know, we just have to see how it plays out. All right, let's move on to Brooks Koepka. He also spoke today, Ryan. He had some interesting comments about winning majors and kind of the philosophy he has. It kind of sounded similar to how Jack Nicklaus used to sound, where he kind of ruled out a lot of his opposition just playing in these big events, because he just thinks that a lot of those guys don't believe they can actually win. What did you make of his comments today?
Yeah, I mean, the bold headline coming out of it was obviously that he said majors are actually easier than right. regular tour events. And the philosophy or the mindset behind that, though, is just like you said, in that so many players in these fields, he thinks, just kind of get intimidated by the fact they're playing in a major championship, and they get overwhelmed by either the golf course or the moment or whatnot. And so he said, listen, I can eliminate half the field just because of that. So then, am I playing well? Am I in a good position to put myself into position on a Sunday to be in contention or whatnot? And he feels like his game is obviously sharp enough to be able to do something along those lines. So it was interesting to listen to him and to listen to the mindset, because you're like, it very was very much like a Jack Nicklaus-esque, where he says, listen, I can mentally beat many of these players before we even get to the first tee, and then it's just a matter of, is my game in the right shape? And then, oh, by the way, he felt really good about how his game is right now, too. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to watch him this week, because I know we all talked in the previous podcast about how he had to be a favorite and he has to be somebody that you got to believe is going to play well at this event. And given the fact that he played even, you know, very well this past weekend, leaves you no reason to believe anything less.
Yeah, you know, a sneaky stat about Brooks Koepka is that certainly we know about the three wins, but 9 top tens in majors and has not missed a cut in a major since the 2013 Open Championship, which he might have been on the European Challenge Tour at that point. I got to look at his record, but I mean, he was not a full-fledged PGA right. Tour member. So it's remarkable. You think about a guy that, you know, his reputation is that he wins majors and that's it. But, you know, now he's starting to establish this record of just being consistently competitive in majors as well. I mean, the last, in 2017, 18, and 19, his worst finish was a T39 at last year's Open Championship, and everything else is, you know, inside a top 15.
What was interesting too today is he talked about the Masters, and in one answer you could hear in the way he was answering it that he was pretty disappointed that he didn't win. Like, he thought mm-hmm. he was playing well enough beyond the tee shot on 12 into the water that he thought he hit really every shot really well on the back nine there. You can make an argument whether he really did or not, but at the same time, he was bummed that he didn't win. He also appreciated, obviously, that the Tiger won and what that moment meant for the game and whatnot. But I liked hearing in his voice the fact that, you know, even for a guy that's won three out of the last seven, he was pretty bummed that he didn't have four, you know. So that speaks to me, again, a mindset there. He knows he's in a really good stretch right now where he can maximize his game and win a lot of majors, and he wants to take advantage of that.
Ryan, obviously last week we talked a lot about the weather, how bad it's been here, how rainy it's been. And now not only is it still raining, but now it's the temperatures are in like the mid-40s. But it actually does look like it's going to get a little better by the time the tournament starts. But I wonder, now that you've been out there and seen the course and heard what some of the players are talking, you know, how wet is the course, and, you know, how much more rain can the course take?
What's interesting is, first of all, it is freezing.
It's freezing, yeah.
I will finally side with Alex here. Multiple layers. It is really cold. It hasn't gotten into the – I mean, if it broke 50 today, it's been at 50 degrees. So mm-hmm. cold today. It's going to warm up. They're thinking in the 60s over the weekend. So, you know, that'll at least get a little bit better. The golf course, surprisingly, from walking around, and I was talking about this with Joel Beal, you know, when he walked around today too, not as wet as you really would think it would be given how much rain we've had over the course of the last couple of weeks here, and specifically the last couple of days. But it is wet out there. The golf course, the rough is pretty thick. The greens, though, are in really, really good shape. Given, again, how much rain we've gotten here, they seem to be rolling really well, according to the players and whatnot. And then, obviously, they're soft right now. The question is just going to be, can the rain stay away so the golf course can get at least a little bit firmer over the course of the next few days? And so it won't be just kind of a dartboard scenario here like we had at Bethpage for the other two majors. Right now, they're looking like some rain perhaps on Thursday and Friday, but the weekend is supposed to look, you know, actually pretty decent and not super breezy necessarily, although Sunday maybe a little bit more. So I think the course, considering what the weather's been like, really good shape. I think that it'll play well. And it's just a matter now of these guys, you know, it looks like it's a British Open out here right now.
Right,
the way
right.
They're walking around with all this stuff. If we can handle, you know, not being too cold out there, and that, you know, that's the variable we didn't mention with Tiger. How's the back handle, how cold it's going to be, and what he's going to have to do to warm up to be able to get ready? That's going to be an interesting scenario here too. But
yeah.
It's actually interesting. I think the temps as much as the rain right now in the next few days are going to be probably a factor.
Yeah, I was actually just going to ask you, or say that this might be the first PGA that you have to go inside to the media center to warm up. But then Joel Beal just slacked us saying that the media center is still an igloo. Is that true? You're bundled up inside even, Ryan.
I would argue, though, it is warmer inside here okay. than outside there. So the few times I've walked out today, I've been like, wow, this is very, very cold. And, you know, it's funny because I did ask Kerry Haig about the opportunity to not have to set up a golf course in 100-degree heat and 100-degree humidity like he's had the last couple of years. And mm-hmm. he said, you know, despite the rain hasn't been the factor. It's been the temperatures. When the temperatures finally can rise enough where the golf course can grow in, that's when he knows he can begin to work on this course. He said that happened about 3 weeks ago. He's happy with what's been going on here. The rain's been obviously a nuisance, but it hasn't been something that's prohibited him to do what he wants to do with the golf course.
You know, the PGA Championship, you know, is often called the fourth major, but it's definitely not the fourth major when it comes to the food. Is the ice cream, are the ice cream sandwiches still out? And I heard that I missed Taco Day today. How was that?
There, it was Taco Day today. I'm sorry about that. We would have boxed one for you if
yeah.
I had known. They actually have ice cream tacos too. A little chocolate on it instead. Yeah, no. You the food scenario for day one was a birdie, definitely.
Good to hear.
And we can go even lower here, I think, later this week.
Good to hear. Okay. Anything else that caught your eye today, Ryan, so far from the grounds?
Well, I think everyone just, again, trying to figure out mentally how to play this golf course because, you know, everyone to a man has talked about how it's a brawny golf course. It's a big ball yard. There's a lot of fun cliches getting thrown out around there. But what that means and how they're going to attack it, I think because it's so wet, everyone's just going to go for broke. And I think it's going to just be a more and more of a bomber's fest. Even, and I know we talked about it the other day, but, you know, I really can't envision a lot of short hitters really being in contention this week. I think you're going to have to hit it long and hit it in the fairway to be able to approach some of these greens. And so I think it just plays into the hands of the big hitters.
I do think I found it interesting what Tiger said about how long the golf course is playing. First of all, because it's so soft, the fairways are inherently wider because there's just less opportunity for the ball to roll into trouble. But the rough is so thick that you're hitting in these elevated greens and you can't spin the ball out of the rough. So I wonder if that plays into or takes a little bit of the power away from some of these big hitters because, you know, you have to be a little bit conscious of not of being off the fairway.
There's definitely that potential, and indeed, and that's what I think guys are trying to who are playing the course today and tomorrow are going to try to figure out. Okay, where do I need to be a little bit more cautious, if you will? Are there a few of these? You know, there's six par fours that are 500 yards or whatnot. Are there a few of them here though that you can still go with a 3-wood or something else off the tee, still put yourself in good position? Because if you're not in the fairway, you're not in good position. You know, and I think that's what they're really kind of testing in the next couple of days. What can I do? You know, it was kind of like last year at Carnoustie where it was so baked out and guys were trying to figure out, do I hit driver and let it run all the time, or do I hit a fairway and make sure I'm still in a fairway here? And I think to certain extent you're right, it's the same kind of mindset, even though it's a totally different setup, and that guys need to know, okay, I've got to be in a fairway, what's the best way for me to do it, and do I really have to go long, or can I lay back a little bit?
Ryan, today, or actually it was yesterday, I think you came out, I know we talked about some picks last week, but you came out with the whole not annual, but you're at every major, your sneaky picks, and one of those guys just happens to be the guy I talked to yesterday, Bubba Watson. Who on that list is really appealing to you? Obviously, I see Bubba right here, 60-1. You have Jorge Campillo in there, who's been on a roll on the European Tour, 250-1. Who else has been jumping out at you?
You know, this year more than in some of the other majors, I really did try to go actually for even more of a long shots. But long shots, that in theory, have a real chance of being contenders here. Whether these guys are really going to win or win, I put Rob Leibritz. I figured all my Met second
friends.
Yes.
I wanted to get to him.
But 3,000-1 odds. No, he's not going to win this thing. But he's won 3 state opens at Bethpage. So he's played this golf course probably more in competition than anybody else in this field, actually. So, but from a more realistic standpoint, you know, one of the guys on the list was Bubba Watson, obviously a guy who's won major championships. And I really do believe that guys who've got experience in winning major championships are going to be at an advantage this week. But one who doesn't, who I'm going to talk out of both sides of my mouth here, but is Patrick Cantlay. That was the other one that I still think he's got a really good shot this week. Mm-hmm. I think his game is in pretty good shape. He's had 6 top tens this season. He had a top 10 at the last major championship of the year. He's, you know, his strokes gained, all his measurements there, you know, he's 6th in strokes gains total, he's 10th off the tee. So there's a lot of reasons to think that his game is in good shape this week. And I think a lot of people really believe that he's got the game to win a major championship. So I think from my sneaky pick standpoint, not somebody that anybody's talking about, but somebody who I definitely think could be a factor come Sunday.
Well, he was a guy that, you know, like 15 holes into the Masters on Sunday, people were, you know, suddenly Googling the hell out of him to see if they were going to have to write about him.
And I learned a tough lesson that day because, it's not my site, but my bet through who you know, Sam, Jeff Gold, that was one of our guys at 80-1. And at one point we got offered a buyout for like $300 each and we didn't take it. And then by the end, I was texting Jeff. I'm like, sell him. He's like, it's for $8. I'm like, just take it. He's not winning. Just take the $4 each. So we should have cashed out on that early. I was going to actually ask everybody to make a club pro pick, but it sounds like we're all in agreement
on
Rob
Leibritz,
our guy. Sam and I, used to cover him a fair amount in the Met section. I know, you know, Chris Powers, who's out there today for us, is going to be very excited. I think I looked up the 20 guys, 6 of them are Met players. So the Met section representing very strong, obviously Rob Leibritz being the guy. Yeah.
Chris definitely saved me a seat on the Leibritz bandwagon, so I was very appreciative of him doing that.
Chris, you know, we played with him on Friday. I don't know if you guys noticed the belt he was wearing. I took a picture
of it. Is it a Rob Leibritz belt?
MGA belt. close enough. It was a Met Golf Association belt. I mean, the kid is on brand.
Rob has his own logo. I in doing some research, actually, he does actually have an RL logo. Yes. And so when you're a club professional who has your own logo, that says something. Right
yeah,
there.
I think it's
he's made the cut.
He's
low
made
club
the cut
pro.
At,
he's legit.
Whistling Straits.
It's his sixth time playing on the PGA.
Yep. Yeah. And he even said that He shares the 36-hole competitive record at Bethpage Black with
Johnson Wagner,
Ricky Barnes.
Oh, Ricky Barnes
from the
also,
2009 yes. U.S. Open. So, you know, the guy has gone low at Bethpage Black before. So, hey, Ryan, I noticed Jordan Spieth is not in your sneaky picks.
I mean, it's like without fail every week.
And he's not in my picks. What did he? Did he slip through the cracks, or is he?
I would argue a three-time major winner probably shouldn't be a sneaky pick, if you will. But I would also argue that I don't think he's going to be in contention this week.
Right.
So you can go on both sides of that fence. No, you know, he's going to come in tomorrow. You know, I listened to him speak on Sunday after his round. It was ironically his best finish, I think, this season, and it was only like a T29 or something like that at Byron Nelson. But you know, he spoke that good game. But I don't know. I bought into it before the Masters. I really believe that he could turn things around at Augusta. I'm not necessarily believing that that's going to happen this week.
Yeah, well, I was worried because when we recorded last week, you know, he had a good first couple days, which has been his MO this year, and then of course he fell down again on the weekend. And it's just amazing. 14 straight stroke play starts not in the top 20.
I thought you were going to say 14 straight podcasts where you were. Going
well,
to
that's right. That too. But he's down to 39th in the world. I don't know. It's crazy. But yeah, I guess we're agreeing that this is probably not the week for him to turn it around. All right. Well, we mentioned Bubba. I had a good chat with him yesterday at Travelers Championship Media Day, where he is a three-time champ. He'll be defending his title there the week after the U.S. Open. You know, we talked about him being there for Tiger's 15th major. That was a special moment, obviously. Bubba's gotten to know Tiger pretty well. He jokes that Tiger blocks his cell phone. He's dead serious. He does say that he does block it, but he still considers them friends, obviously. We talked about his experience, the All-Star NBA All-Star Celebrity Game a few years ago when he got the shot blocked by T-Mac. We talked about his baseball team, how well they're doing this year. So we had a nice little chat ahead of the PGA. He talked about Bethpage as well. And you know, he's got actually a decent track record there. So anyway, please have a listen to our chat with Bubba Watson.
Before we go on, let me talk for a second about Golf Digest Schools. Golf Digest Schools is our new cutting-edge video instruction platform offering more than 250 classes on every part of the game and featuring the leading teachers in golf, from Butch Harmon to David Ledbetter to Michael Breed. Unlike the quick tips you can find across the internet, these are full game improvement programs meant to be followed step by step as if you were working with a pro. It's like Masterclass meets Netflix, but even better because there's the added promise of feedback. To sign up for Golf Digest Schools, go to golfdigest.com/allaccess and use promo code SCHOOLS to get 30% off an annual subscription. Again, golfdigest.com/allaccess and use promo code SCHOOLS.
All right. I'm excited to welcome Bubba Watson to the Golf Digest podcast. Bubba, how are you doing today? Thanks for coming on.
Thank you. I'm doing great, man.
All right. So let's talk about the season first. You know, obviously last year was a bit of a bounce back for you. You won three times. This year, it seems like you've been in contention almost as many times, but maybe the wins just haven't come. Does that just show, you know, how thin the margins are out there to win and losing, or are you happy with your game right now?
I'm happy with my game. I just think that you're right. It's the winning and losing is such a fine line. If you remember the Masters, which we all do, but I mean, there was about, gosh, it felt like there was 15 so guys with nine holes to go that were right there.
Exactly.
And when I putted out on 16, I think I was one off the lead at the time. And then Tiger was just making the turn, I think, around that time. So, I mean, it's just one of those things where, you know, a putt here or a chip in here, whatever it is, can change everything.
Right.
And I just haven't had that moment this year.
Right. You know, so the swing feels good. Everything feels good pretty much otherwise. Or is there anything that you're, you know, working on?
Well, I mean, you're always working on putting, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, everything feels good. You know, looking forward to the challenges. But, you know, just wanting that four good days or that one moment that sparks something.
Right, right. Now, obviously, you still have plenty of time to qualify for the President's Cup team, but you've already said that you'd almost rather be a vice captain. What, you know, I know you got to do that, obviously, at Liberty National. What about that role do you enjoy so much?
I just love it. It's a different challenge. It's a different challenge from the game of golf. And so for me as an individual, it challenges yourself. And, you know, you think it's easy picking out outfits, you know, but, you know, you'll have a assistant captain or the captain or a player show up in the morning breakfast and be like, that's the wrong outfit, man. And so you got to take them back and get the right outfit. But that's one of the things. It's just the challenge of trying to get everybody to come together as a unit,
right,
and win. And so for me, don't get me wrong. We want to play.
Right.
We want to win
right.
the winning shot. We want to win the winning putt. But at the same time, for me, from my personal standpoint, it would just be more fun to just be a captain.
Well, you told Dan Patrick last week that you think Tiger's kind of blocked your number a couple times.
Oh, he did? I don't think
it. You know it. I know. Is this one of the things that you bug him about, being a vice captain for him in particular?
Yeah, because if I become a vice captain or a player, you get the list of numbers. And the reason why is so that we can all be informed of what we're doing. We have been a group text. And there's a player's group text and then a coach, a captain's group text. And so either one, you get everybody's number. And right. So I'd get his number at least for a week.
Right. obviously, you mentioned being there on Sunday. You were in the thick of things at Augusta. But then you also, you know, you had your green jacket on and you were by the clubhouse when Tiger came by. You were one of the first people that he saw before he signed the scorecard. What was that feeling like, being kind of witness to history and knowing that your friend, you know, one of your friends had just done it?
Yeah, it's one of those things. Well, so history is one thing, mm-hmm. right? Like, to be able to witness history and see it and knowing that now, I mean, now we're even talking about it's only three wins away
right.
or three major wins
right.
away. So, you know, at four, it just seems, man, back surgery, I don't know. And then he wins. You're like, wait a second. I mean, he's going to play the Masters a few more times.
Right.
And so, you know, now you're dreaming about this. And so to be there, and then from the other element of history, we don't want any more champions in our locker room. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
We talk about that on Tuesday nights. We talk about that while we're in there.
Right.
So we're like, we're pulling for anybody with a green jacket already. And so when we were up there, they said, are you going to take your green jacket? And I said, yeah, I am. He's one of us. We
right.
we won it together. And so
right.
so we went down there and a few of us went down there. And so, yeah, it was pretty cool from different standpoints. But as a friend and everything, and back in the day, I told him a long time ago that I wanted to be there when he won his next major.
Mm.
And so luckily for me, he could care less. But luckily for me, I was there. And so it was a cool moment. Yeah.
What did you think of Patrick Reed's Champions Dinner menu this year?
Really good.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he's going to have meat and potatoes,
yeah.
you know. You knew that was coming.
Right,
and
right,
so
right.
I had no idea what was coming, but I knew for a fact it was somehow going to be meat and potatoes.
Right. It was cream corn and cream spinach, though.
Yes,
that seemed
sure.
a little aggressive. No, I like it, but...
Yeah, exactly. That's Southern boy. That's what you do, right?
Now, I know you've said before the weeks that you've won there that you ate a burrito every night, even
mm-hmm.
one night before the Champions Dinner.
A couple times I've
a couple
eaten
times
before
but,
I Champions
Dinner. Okay. did you ever think about serving that for your Champions Dinner menu?
No, because it's more of a honoring my mom. Southern cooked meal from my mom is what I always try to go to.
Okay. Where is your go-to burrito place in Augusta? I know there's a Moe's.
There's
right
a Moe's.
Place,
there's
yeah.
Barberito's is probably the one I go to the most.
Okay.
There's a Moe's, and now that there's a Chipotle, so they've all stepped up, you know?
Sure, sure. Okay, going back to when you were the champion, you know, we've already seen Tiger kind of show up to his own restaurant, wearing the green jacket, wearing his gym shorts. Where's the most kind of random place you ever took the green jacket?
You know, I truly don't, the first year I won, mm-hmm. I didn't take it anywhere. I put it in my closet and never brought it out.
Wow.
I kept it in the bag. It was more of an embarrassment thing, and I didn't want people to bug it. I didn't want people to want to try to take pictures with it.
Right, right.
And I wanted to respect what the membership and what Augusta National is all about. And so the second time I won, I took it to my schools and when I donated money. But I wanted, it was more about, wasn't about the game of golf. It was about dreaming and accomplishing your dreams. Whatever that dream is, it doesn't have to be golf, but accomplishing your dreams. And so that's what it was about. But I, out of honor and respect, I just never... And maybe I got a note from them saying, don't do anything crazy. But I just out of honor and respect for the membership and
right.
the tournament, I just never did it.
Do you wish you could keep it all the time, or do you like
it? Well, yeah, I'd wear
yeah.
it. Today is a perfect day to wear it. But I'd wear it everywhere. It doesn't matter how hot it is. I'd let everybody know that I was a champion.
Right. Obviously, you're most known for those two Masters wins, but right here was where you picked up your first PGA Tour win at the Travelers Championship. You know, thinking back on that, win. How important was that as kind of a springboard for everything else that you've accomplished?
You know, it's been a wild ride, but I think that 5 years into my career on the tour, winning, my dad going through his cancer at that moment, all that added in together was just, it was a perfect storm, perfect buildup for me to launch, you know, into further wins. And then a couple weeks later, I had a chance to win in the PGA Championship when I got beat by Martin Kaymer in the playoff. And, you know, I truly believe that that was a blessing to me, because if I would have won that and went from a win to a major win, who knows, I probably would have stumbled, right? Mm-hmm. I'd have just started thinking I was too good for everybody or whatever it is, right? And so I look back at that. That was probably winning here and then losing at the playoff at the PGA Championship, I think really helped me and really wanted me to help me focus more on trying to win a major.
Right.
Like I was like, man, I was so close.
Right, right.
And so I truly believe those two moments are the moments that helped me get to where I am today.
Hmm. You know, I think that's the only playoff that you've lost. You have a great record in playoffs. Is there, what do you think that comes from? Is that just...
I think because I've lost already.
Okay.
And at the same time, I always take it, I don't want to give this secret out, but I always take it as no matter what happens, I finish second place.
Right, right.
And second place is pretty good on the PGA Tour,
right?
Especially at a major. So I look at it from that perspective. I look at it as, why not go for it? Because you're coming in second no matter what.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So. You know, you've accomplished so much, 12 wins, two majors, but it's all come within the last 9 years. You know, you got maybe to a slower start. What, when you look back on it, are you still surprised by all that you've accomplished?
Oh, very much. You know, when people say two-time Masters champion, I just don't even think about that. I just think about somehow I won it. And then 12 times a winner on tour, I can't even comprehend it. You know, like you dream about it, but to actually do it and have done it, I still don't think about it. I mean, it's overwhelming to me when I sit back and really just think about it myself. Yeah.
You're 40 now. When you turn 40 on tour, is there any sort of teasing? I mean, obviously you're still younger than Tiger and Phil, but some of the younger guys, do they give
Make
you
sure
any
you remember that.
Do they give you a hard time now that you're 40?
No, actually nobody does. I mean, and, you know, and the thing is though, it's, if you look, I mean, the 40 now is kind of like the old 30, right? Like,
yeah,
you're looking at Davis Love and his wins in the 50s. You're looking at Phil Mickelson's won at 48 already this year. Tiger's now won. What Vijay did in his 40s. So, I mean, there's so many guys that we can sit here and talk about in their 40s. And I think now it's just we've learned how to, well, we learned properly to eat better, train better, and focus on the right things to help us have a longer career. So, but no, nah, there's no, or maybe I just don't have that many friends. They didn't haze me or anything, but really nobody did anything.
What would be a piece of advice if you could go back to when you turned pro that you would give young Bubba?
Oh, my gosh. I'd tell myself not to buy as many cars as I did. I'd tell myself that we're going in the right direction and do more for outside the game of golf. The golf gives me the platform, but the children's hospitals, the different charities, and like the Hole in the Wall Gang Camp here in Connecticut to be a part of is more important than these trophies that we have. Hmm. Yeah.
Obviously, big week coming up, the PGA Championship. You've played Bethpage both at a U.S. Open, at a regular tour event. What do you kind of expect this week, and how do you like that place and the overall atmosphere there?
We'll just take weather out of it.
Right.
Even though weather's going to be, could be an issue. If weather out of it, I would have to say it's going to be like a U.S. Open. They're going to have higher rough. Mm-hmm. They're going to have fast greens, probably firm greens. So it's going to be a very difficult course where my whole goal is to hit fairways. If that means hitting an iron off the tee, or a 3-wood off the tee, trying to get it in position. So then I can attack from that perspective. And when I say attack, it's really just pars and try to make a birdie here and there.
What about the crowds there at Bethpage? Are they really that different than other places?
I don't know if different's the right word, but it's more.
More. Okay.
Because they love their sports. If you look at every state in the Northeast, it's all about sports.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's sports teams, there's different sports, there's all this stuff. So they all love sports in this area. And so when you add that in to an iconic golf course like this, a public golf course like this, why would they not come out and support their community, but also support a sport that they love as well? And so I just think it's just more. It just seems like every hole is lined with thousands and thousands of people.
Yeah. Obviously, I wonder how often does your shot in the playoff against Louisville stays in? How often do people bring that up? And is it far enough removed that you don't think about it every time you play that hole, or do you still kind of think about it? Do you ever go over to that spot?
I went over to the spot. We play with the Sunday before we played with Condoleezza Rice and Lee Schlesinger. So we went over there, and Lee's wife was with us, and so I told her about the shot and everything. That's really the only time I went over there. But during the tournament, you know, the players I'm playing with will bring it up.
Okay.
We'll talk about it then. But, you know, I try to take it out of my mind because I don't want to go back in that situation. I'm right. trying to hit that fairway again.
Right.
So I try to block it out. But, no, everybody that I talk to, when somebody comes up to me and meets me for the first time or something, they always talk about that shot.
Yeah.
So it's very memorable, and obviously it helps remember that moment in my life where, you know, became an adoptive dad the week before.
Sure.
And then my dad not being there, my mom was there. And then have three golfers come down there and walk from the clubhouse down to watch me play.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's pretty special. That's very rare. And to have a friendship like that, that's pretty good.
Sure. I had $10 on Louis Oosthuizen at 90-1.
Oh,
I was
did
feeling
you really?
Pretty good when you...
you know what, though? When you watch that putt, when you watch his putt on 10... I can tell you some stories, but when you watch that putt on 10, I still don't know how it missed.
Oh, his par putt.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. I mean, I don't know how it missed. He putted good all week, but that one. And if you go back to playoffs, you know, you're talking about playoffs earlier.
Right.
If you go back to playoffs, if you watch me hit that tee shot, my shoulders slumped down after the tee shot. Because in my head, what I thought about when my shoulders went down was I had a second time to win a major, and I can't pull it off.
Right.
But then somehow I got lucky and did it.
Right.
But at that moment, I was like, I've lost two majors in playoffs. Like, am I ever
you really
get
thought that? Yeah.
Like, that's what I thought. Like, this could be it.
Wow.
And so I was trying to, you know, we all trying to win a major, but have two chances and not get one of them.
Right.
So that's why my shoulders dropped down.
Different type of shot. The All-Star Celebrity Game. Do you still have nightmares about T-Mac?
No, he fouled me. So not many people know this, but I kind of told the people this year, but... So I hurt my hand when he fouled me. I hurt my hand, pulled my finger back. The next morning, I couldn't move my hand, and I'm playing in the second to last group, or third to last group in LA. And so luckily, I got it where I could bend it, and took enough pain medication. But so nobody really knows that. But now I have that picture. I have that picture up at my house. He signed it.
Oh,
and it has it, and it shows his hand hitting my hand. Right there, right after he blocked my shot. So we made fun of it, but I have it up at my house. It's pretty neat.
Well, good for you. You didn't complain, because all these other NBA guys complained about every call.
I got a foul. Oh, there was no ref listening to me, but I was trying to.
You mentioned fitness briefly before, and I want to ask you, you did a funny video recently kind of when you poke fun of your fitness, but you do stay in shape, right? I mean, now that you're in your 40s. And also, have you ever worked out with Tiger and seen him in action?
No, I'm not man enough to work out with Tiger. And he's never asked me to work out with him, but I couldn't keep up with him. But truly what I did is just change diet. You just change your diet. Mm. That's the first focus that anybody's trying to change anything about their body. I took away from all the desserts every night.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just changed up the routine that way and have sugar every once in a while.
Mm, yeah. That's it. Can we expect another Golf Boys video ever, or is that kind of done?
You know what? The hard part with that is that the fact that the tour is now year-round.
Yes.
And so now there's – to try to find – it took us at least three days. It was probably 4 days we travel for all of us to meet up. So mm-hmm. to find us
–
and so when you talk about the kids, gosh, Hunter has what, three kids?
Yeah.
Ben Crane has two or three. And I have two.
Right.
And Ricky doesn't have any.
Right.
So it's just trying to find the time is so impossible
sure,
right now.
Sure.
The tour, basically, blame it on the tour. Yes.
And just finally, Blue Wahoos, how's the team looking this year? And do you have any future MLB studs we should be looking
out for?
You
know what? What I like this year is this is our first year with the Twins.
Okay.
So we're with the Twins, and the Twins are doing amazing up there.
Yep.
And then our team is, I think we have a 5-game lead right now.
Wow.
Halfway through the first half. Because, you know, in minor league baseball, there's two halves.
Mm-hmm.
So if you win the first half or win the second half, you get the playoffs.
Okay.
So right now we got a 5-game lead. So if we can get the win on this first half of the season, we get in the playoffs.
Awesome.
But everything's looking good. Mm-hmm. And especially being with the Twins, it's been an amazing journey, but fun getting to know them and being a part of their system.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much, Bubba. Appreciate the time. Good luck this week at the PGA. Good luck down the road. Good luck back here at the Travelers. And good luck the rest of the season. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Hey, thank you.
Take care. Thanks again to two-time Masters champ Bubba Watson for joining us. We'll be watching him this week. Of course, we'll be watching a lot of other people, and in particular Tiger Woods. Of course, this sets up great for the PGA Championship. He comes in off that Masters win. He does have that early tee time Thursday morning. Could be a little chilly when he tees off. But, you know, obviously that would be a dream scenario for him to be in contention, for him to win the first two legs of the Grand Slam would be something else. But Sam and Ryan, what else would be the next best dream storyline for this tournament?
I mean, other than Rob LeBritz?
Other than Rob LeBritz, which the hometown kid, or 47-year-old kid winning a major out of nowhere.
Jordan Spieth completing the career Grand Slam, right, and then giving you a big middle finger as he walks off with the Wanamaker Trophy. That would be the next best thing.
That'd be something.
So that would be one. I mean, I've obviously said this before. I think Ricky Fowler winning a major is still the kind of the one win that I think would really resonate with an audience just beyond the core golf fan. So I think he's certainly a guy who could make a run at it this week, and that would definitely be a great story to write.
No, that is a good one. That would top what I've got here. I think the reemergence of Rory McIlroy and trying to give another foil to Tiger and another one of get him another major, get him back on the major role here, if you will. I think the game is better when he's playing well, because I think he's a pretty dynamic person and whatnot. So seeing him get be able to actually cap off a Sunday here, which he hasn't done in a few weeks, I think that would be a big deal.
Yeah, I mean, and it's funny because I feel like there have been a lot of majors where we've said, oh, it's wet, sets up so well for Rory this
right.
week. And that's in the last few years, and he really hasn't taken advantage in the last few years. But he does seem kind of due. I mean, the PGA in 2014 was his last major win. Now, obviously, the PGA has moved up in the schedule, so it's not quite 5 years yet. But we're going back almost 5 years. He's now 30.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's definitely – there's no reason why he shouldn't contend this week. I think I said that last week. So it would be – I agree with Ryan. He's such a dynamic personality. Yeah. And I think, now you're talking about Tiger Woods and Rory McIlroy going back-to-back.
Exactly,
And, it's like
– After Brooks Koepka last year. I mean, I'm just talking about,
I know.
And Hall of Fame-level talents.
And let's
winning.
Be honest, Brooks, winning – obviously, you start talking about, the best player in the world. If Brooks Koepka wins this week, you cannot argue he's the best player in the world. Yet – and this is not a slight at Brooks, but no one is pining to see Brooks Koepka win. I hate to say it that way, but he doesn't really stir the emotions of the golf fans. And I go back to this idea of I don't think people relate to him as a golfer. He's such a physical specimen, so immensely talented. It's hard for, the average 12 handicap to relate to him.
But not to go down a whole different path here, but why, because I was talking about this with someone else, why is Dustin Johnson so much more popular than Brooks Koepka? Because they're both these athletic freaks. They both don't show emotion on the course. I know Dustin has, Paulina Gretzky and everything else.
The one thing I will say is it's also the weird part that's hard to relate to is that Brooks Koepka doesn't have this, record of near misses in majors and this kind of larger context you can draw on, a guy who's due to win a major.
Right.
He suddenly is a guy who won a major. And then he won another major, and then he won another major. He's a hard guy to suddenly say, the long struggle of Brooks Koepka. And again, I feel bad saying that because there's no reason to really root against him. It's just one of those, inherent reactions you have when you start talking about him.
It's pretty impressive, though, that you could make a case really for, I'd say, at least four different guys. Rory, Brooks, Rory, at least this season, I know he won the Players, Brooks, Francesco, and Tiger. I mean, four guys could stake a claim to being the best player in the world. And that's none of them are world number one.
I know, that's what I'm saying. It's amazing.
What about Justin Rose?
I mean, when he won at Torrey, we were saying that too.
Yeah.
I guess just the last few months he's kind of cooled off, and obviously it's now been, it's almost 6 years since he won his only major. So these other guys have at least done it in between him. But if you want to throw in DJ, not throw him in, he's number one in the world, and Rose, it's pretty impressive that you have that many good guys at the top. Obviously Tiger was the one we just never thought we would really have in that conversation again, but I don't know, it's interesting. But you're right, Ricky Fowler winning would be the biggest story, and then Phil probably third.
Sure.
Yeah. Even though it's not a U.S. Open, but
right.
You know. How funny would that be?
Right. Exactly.
One year after the other two.
Yeah. Ones. Poor guy. It's probably having. All right. Well, anyway, we look forward to seeing how the action unfolds. We look forward to getting out there, meeting up with you, Ryan. Thanks for calling in. Thanks to Bubba Watson again for joining us. Thanks to our producer, Brittany Romano, as always. Thanks to you for listening. Please subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts if you haven't done so already. And check back later in the week when we have a wrap from Bethpage Black at the PGA Championship.